Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, this is Nestor with RE/MAX Premier Realty, and I'm here with Kim Krones from RE/MAX Premier Realty as well. Say hello, Kim.
Hello, everyone.
And our conversation today is about Melrose. And it's often asked, we get asked in open houses, we get asked just in general chit-chat, we get asked pretty much every time we talk about a house, does this house have Melrose? And so we're going to talk today a little bit about Melrose, but before we get started, a little bit of tidbits about Melrose. It was actually named after two gentlemen, Mellor and Ruse, first name Henry and first name Mike, a senator and assemblyman, and it was enacted in 1982. And it came as a result of Proposition 9, came as a result of Proposition 13 from 1978, and it was a way to basically help put more money in for our infrastructure, schools, things like that, streets, and all of that stuff as new communities started to be developed. That's the general. Do you agree, Kim, that that's kind of the general idea of what it is?
Actually, part of my background is new homes, and I was asked this a lot as a result of having sold new homes because people would come into communities where there were master plans in particular where they would have Melrose. And so they'd always be asking you that question in an attempt to actually avoid Melrose out in the marketplace, which, again, in new home communities is very difficult to do. So the way I would explain it back then was as a result of Proposition 13, which some of us heard of when we were kids because our parents were so excited about their taxes were being capped, they couldn't, you know, go up more than the standard 2% per year of Proposition 13. That was a great thing. What it didn't account for, though, was infrastructure, as you said, streets, lights, schools, parks, those type of things, actually implementing that infrastructure. So when you have a new home area, that particularly one that is a master plan, because infills are a little different, but when you have a master plan, something has to pay for those things. And in so doing, they put on the Melrose tax, which is what? A bond, right?
Yes, it's often a question, is it a tax or is it a bond? It's argued both ways of whether it's actually a tax. Most people look at it as a tax, I believe, just because it actually falls on your tax bill. But we in the industry, and from my understanding, it's actually a bond.
Basically, the bonds were put in place in order to – well, the taxes are how we pay for it, right? But the bonds are put in place in order to pay for that infrastructure. So we pay the taxes to do it. So instead of the builder taking in that cost and then raising the price of the home, they put it on as a bond so they can keep the price of the house down, put it on as a tax. And in doing so, they typically go – back in the day, there were 20- to 25-year bonds. Today, I'm often hearing they're 40-year bonds in order to do the same thing. So we pay for those, yes.
Correct. And I think that the length of the bond has always been the same. From my understanding, and I could be incorrect in this, is that when new home builders actually had an opportunity to – they've had that opportunity to actually pay off the bond, and in essence it would raise the price of the property, they could actually pay off a portion of the bond, reducing the number of years down.
It is my understanding that there is some flexibility as well. I've also seen where they've refinanced the bond. So maybe they were a 20 to 25 year bond at one point. They refinance and bring down the payment, in essence bringing down everybody's taxes, but extended the period of time of the bond.
The big $1 million question is, will it go away?
As a tax, the way I would always tell people is, you know, they say it'll go at the way at the end of its term, but as a tax, taxes tend to reappear in some form or be voted back in or something else. So I would not bank on it going away, but it would be nice, and I'd be fighting for it if I were at the end of the term.
Correct, and I agree. We have seen some areas where there were bonds that were put in or Melrose that were put in, and they actually did meet their term, and they finished, and they were not reinstated or put back in. Others we have seen where they have actually reinstated them and extended the term out. So we never know. Another tidbit that I'll mention at this point is, although Melrose came in 1982, it's often explained that if your house was built prior to 1982 that you don't have Melrose. There is actually in writing that they have the ability to put Melrose in those properties if necessary. I've yet to see it be done in any communities out here in Orange County, but it is out there. So
Another thing that's kind of interesting is a lot of people think maybe a community doesn't have Mela-Roos because nobody's telling them it has Mela-Roos. Along the way, Mela-Roos kind of became a dirty word, and in that process, you started seeing things being called CFD or CFD-something else. That's Community Facilities District. And Community Facilities District is a fancy word for Mela-Roos, basically, so it does still exist. In a lot of new home communities, your taxes can be, say, 2%, like you'll see down in South County with Rancho Mission Viejo. Originally, when Rancho Santa Margarita and Ladera Ranch were put in place, they were around 2%. Another interesting tidbit a lot of people don't recognize, though, is that Mela-Roos is actually a flat rate fee. So where your regular taxes are approximately 1.04 plus your other, incidentals that they add to the tax bill, bringing California to a state average of 1.25%. Mela-Roos, when they add it on, in many new communities works out to be approximately 2%, but it's really the 1.04 plus the miscellaneous bringing you to the 2%. So what does this mean to you? It means that in the event prices go up, as they tend to do in California, your Mela-Roos remains flat, your base tax goes up, your Mela-Roos does not, so your effective tax rate goes down. So take areas like Rancho Santa Margarita, Ladera Ranch, that have now been around for 20-ish years. These areas are now experiencing taxes of approximately 1.5% because they have a higher purchase price today than they once did, and they're not actually that far off of state of California average.
Correct. I think another way of saying that is when people ask, what is the Mela-Roos in this particular property? The answer that you should be looking for is what is the base tax rate plus what are the exact amounts of the bonds.
Correct.
That would be a better way of describing so that you have a better understanding of exactly how much you're paying. Because Ken is correct, as our property values go up, when it's based on a percentage, that number actually is declining as the years pass.
Well, the other thing that would be interesting to know is what are you getting for that Mela-Roos? Because the good news associated with Mela-Roos is you do get the new infrastructure. There are some communities, even in new home communities, where occasionally you can avoid Mela-Roos. Those are called infill. And what that basically means is, say it's an individual set of homes of maybe 20 homes in an area where the schools were pre-1982, as you said. And in those instances, they may already have everything paid for where they go in and they, just start up with the homes and they already have these pre-existing things. The nice thing about some of the areas that have the Mela-Roos is, again, you get all of the new infrastructure that goes with it, and with the new schools comes the new technology, typically just because they're, recent. And so it has a lot of benefits associated with it, so long as you know what you're dealing with.
Okay, well, very good. So, is Mela-Roos a tax write-off?
As we would always say in our business, check with an accountant or an attorney for tax-related advice or, attorney-related advice. That said, I have heard some people write it off and others do not. We were joking between us that we haven't actually heard where the IRS has gone after anybody, but that doesn't mean they won't start.
That is, and the reason for that question is because when we first started discussing Mela-Roos and we talked about the fact that it's actually not a tax and a bond, that always leads to the question, is it tax deductible? I will tell you that the majority of the people that we know of write it off, and I've yet to see that it's been challenged.
It does not mean it can't be, though.
It doesn't.
Just understand. They want more tax, they might decide to challenge it. But they might open a can of worms in the process, too.
Absolutely. So what are the things should we be looking for when we're looking at Mela-Roos? We talked about what the base rate is. We talked about the length of the Mela-Roos. Any other things or any other factors that we should be looking at when we're talking about Mela-Roos?
Most topics that I would typically handle as associated with Mela-Roos, I think we've actually covered here today.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Well, very good. Well, Kim, thank you very much for joining us today. And out there in the real world, thank you guys very much for listening. We appreciate it. And we hope to hear you or have you back soon. Not sure what our next episode will be, but look forward to talking with you guys soon.
Thanks for stopping by.
Bye-bye.
Actually, we did okay.
Yeah.